The following Dharma talk was given by Ron Hogan Green. Hogan Sensei is a lay teacher in the Mountains and Rivers Order. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at cmm.org.
Thanks for listening.
Good afternoon. The Journey. A poem by Mary Oliver. One day, you finally knew what you had to do and began. Though the voices around you kept shouting their bad advice, though the whole house began to tremble, and you felt the old tug at your ankles, "Mend your life," each voice cried. But you didn't stop. You knew what you had to do. Though the wind pried with its stiff fingers the very foundations, though their melancholy was terrible, it was already late. Late enough, and a wild night, and the road full of fallen branches and stones. But little by little, as you left their voices behind, the stars began to burn through the sheets of clouds, and there was a new voice, which you slowly recognized as your own, that kept you company as you strode deeper and deeper into the world, determined to do the only thing you could do, determined to save the only life you could save. This poem, you may be familiar with, it's an old friend. And I think I used it once before. I actually tried to find it. I couldn't. But it doesn't matter. And it came up for me in studying the way of everyday life. It just fit perfectly for me. Because the opening lines of the way of everyday life in this poem seem the same to me. In this poem, Mary Oliver points to some place that we're all familiar with. We're deeply attracted to the possibility of an authentic life, a life that stands on firm, trusted ground, confirmed by our own experiences, which invites us to live with wonder and wholeness. At the same time, we feel a sense of being trapped by our old familiar voices, our old familiar patterns, and which we've come to realize hollow us out. We can walk this path, the Tao, only by ourselves. And yet, we must do so together, and not just together with those in the room or at home, but together with a lot of beings. We are walking a path from the perspective of our pain body that lives in the world of samsara, and accents the deeply felt separateness from others. And it may seem impossible, unavailable, this path. And yet, there is a call, and we're hearing it. There is an imperative to awaken to our life. Are we alone? Are we all one? Are we a single selfless being? Are we all beings, yet living as if we're disconnected from all beings? In a way, the opening lines of the Genjo Koan ask these questions. So it doesn't take long on this path to find out again and again that we cannot do this alone. as we practice together, we speak directly with each other. And sometimes the deep connection between us becomes crystal clear, as if it were our own true body. One day you finally knew what you had to do and began. So all of us who practice know this moment. We had to begin. Why? We had to. It's important to keep in mind this why, to keep it before us. Why did we have to turn to practice? Why did you finally know? We have ways to point to this question, why? We speak of samsara, of mara, which are code names for our own deeply entrenched patterns and conditioning, karmic tendencies, our pain, our demons, our subtle, often unconscious attractions, our desires that can overrun our lives. And it's interesting, even knowing why we wish to turn towards the Dharma, there can still be a gap between understanding where this practice, why this practice is so crucial, so essential to our lives, and deeply and consistently engaging in it. Sometimes we may linger in the bardo of knowing and holding on to something that allows us to be safe, that allows us not to risk, that allows us to keep a space between us and the actual practices that we do, especially the practice of Zazen, a space, a safe space. It's not unusual for people to say, when this is brought up, I'm afraid. And that's terrific when you can acknowledge that. We are all afraid. And so this is okay. That sense of fear, that sense of trying to address this separation, it's probably universal. It can be helpful to appreciate that space and to take a moment to breathe deeply into it, to acknowledge it, because it's there. We are asking so much of ourselves. This is not easy. And so please, at every step along the way, be kind to yourself. Be gentle, be patient with yourself. And please be persistent. In the translation we're using, it says, when all dharmas are Buddha Dharma, there are enlightenment and delusion, practice, life and death, Buddhas and creatures. When the 10,000 dharmas without a self, there are no delusions, no enlightenment, no Buddhas, no creatures, no life, and no death. The Buddha way transcends being and non-being. Therefore, there are life and death, delusion and enlightenment, creatures and Buddhas. Nevertheless, flowers fall without attachment, when weeds spring up with aversion. So we've all heard this over and over, read it over and over, perhaps studied it over and over. This is the ground of Dogen's teaching. It is the ground of the Buddha's teaching. What is that ground? What is the way that transcends being and non-being? The Dharma rests on cause and effect. It is by directly personally, practicing and encountering your actual body of reality that you make the Genjo Koan your own. It's intensely personal. Each sentence in the Gendro Koan is the way of everyday life, the whole of it, each one. Each statement is a statement of practice realization, simply because all things are the Buddha Dharma when we turn to it. You perhaps know that in most or perhaps all of Dogen's fascicles, he puts right up front the essence of the fascicle he's presenting, and also does usually a concluding perspective that in both sides summarize the teaching. For me, in this case, perhaps for you, it's all summarized in the first word. When? He didn't say all dharmas are Buddha Dharma, and therefore there is. He didn't say that. He said, when? And I checked the translations. It either says when or at such a time, a specific time. When? That is personal. It's not some idea. It's relational to you, that when. This when is at the core of your practice. This when sums up the whole Gendro Koan. When? The practice of realization, when, becomes the fabric of your life. The Buddha Dharma, when, is always present in your life, inherently present. And yet it's up to you and to me to practice and make it real, alive, functional. When is not just a moment of understanding that we must practice and awaken. That's a very small way of looking at it. It is a when of now. And now. And now. Continually renewed by ongoing effort, by ongoing dedication, by ongoing faith, by a sensitivity to our suffering and others' suffering, and by the demand that we can place on our life to address the suffering, ours and others. That is the when. So we can say when is now, yet this now has always been now. It's always been right before us. Where else would it go? That's all we got. That is all we will ever have. Period. And yet, over and over again, we have to make it ours. We have to come awake now. That's when. When my son is born, and when my lover dies, this is when. On the threshold, I come here realizing the question of life and death is a vital matter. Please guide me in my practice. That is when. In this when, we turn to our Dharma ancestors to guide us. How many beings do you think are guiding us? We can start to conceptualize and think about them, but we kind of run out of brain, don't we? There's too many. They're all conspiring to help us wake up. Some we know, most we don't know. And when that when comes alive, it's not just sentient beings, it's not just those who practice. It includes those who don't practice. Includes the teachings of the insentient, which are all insentient things, which are not things at all. So we turn to each other We turn, because we have to turn to each other. We turn, and we chant, and we ask, and we plea. And I keep coming back, it seems, in talk after talk. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all bodhisattvas, mahasattvas, please, please help me open my great heart of perfect wisdom. Please. Where are all these bodhisattvas? Are they out there? I don't think so. You would not be here if they were out there. In this turning, in this when we turn, everything changes. When we take up the koan mu and turn everything towards it, everything, it is revealed to us as us. And everything changes, although nothing has changed. When we sit with just this when, now, everything changes. Because of this when, something happens that we could not have envisioned before. And it only happens when. One day you finally knew what you had to do and began, though the voices around you kept shouting their bad advice. Those voices. Whose voices are they? Anyway, very familiar to us, aren't they? Who is shouting so insistently at us? Who's demanding so insistently? Or who's so carefully whispering, do not trust yourself? What did Shakyamuni do when he sat under the Bodhi tree and the voices kept shouting their bad advice? You think you're the first one? You're at the end of a very long line. Maybe you're at the beginning of a very long line. One day you finally knew what you had to do and began, though the voices around you kept shouting their bad advice. Though the whole house began to tremble, and you felt the old tug at your ankles, mend my life. Each voice cried, pleaded, but you didn't stop. As I often say, this practice is not free. We have voices, inner voices, outer voices. And they're saying, what you're doing is not normal. It's weird. It's harmful. Has anyone ever said that to you? They've said it to me, sometimes repeatedly. And the whole house, you, began to tremble. There's a karma in listening to those voices. You know that karma, or you wouldn't be here. And a very different karma in not being satisfied with the advice of those voices. And going on, not stopping. Isn't it interesting that your voice is crying, mend my life? It's so simple, so available to step into. If I just stop, fill in the blanks, we all got them. If that person would just be a bit different, I can calibrate it exactly, or treat me the way I wish, or demand, or infinite ors. Or if I would just more blanks to fill in. The question that I've found so helpful is, how is mending my life working out for me? when I concluded it wasn't, my practice changed very, very much. I could step into my own life responsible for this life. It's me. It's not you. It's not it. It's me that I need to look at. We may understand that a life will always have dissatisfaction and tension, friction, pain, and inevitably our health will change as we grow older and begin to sense our impending death. We can understand that. And if you wish to mend and fix the issues in your life, you should go ahead and skillfully do that. But no matter how we might fix, inevitably we face the unending changes of our existence. The inevitability of change upsetting our apple cart, our plans, our manipulations, and the havoc that our fixing can bring based on the idea of permanence, that this, as it is now, is the way it's going to be. The one guarantee that we have, of course, is that it won't be that way. It will change. We can't change the fact that we will never find a when of no stress, no unhappiness, no pain. We'll never find endless self-satisfaction. Or if we think we do, it'll change. And what do you think the karma of complete satisfaction is? It's dissatisfaction. Of course, the other side. You can't have one without the other. So are we trying to build a life about, around, and involve with satisfaction and what-ifs and control? So let's start with this understanding of our life. Starting with this understanding, we're not in control. It will change, whatever it is. We can relax a bit. We can open our arms to what is, to who we are. This is not a simple thing, because for the most part, we're hidden from ourselves. You know, the obvious conditioning is the obvious conditioning. That's probably the least of it. What did St. Paul said? Something like, I don't understand why I do what I do, but I can't stop doing it. I'm paraphrasing, but that seems to describe a lot of what goes on for us. But we can relax. We can open our arms to the acceptance of our being, to who we are. This practice is not a practice of cultivating tranquility or a certain frame of mind or peacefulness. It's a practice of wakefulness, of being awake, no matter what the circumstances are of our life, of being awake. And there's a deep penetrating wisdom to that awakefulness under all circumstances. It inherently is wise and compassionate, because you are inherently wise and compassionate. It's pretty simple. We study ourselves and get out of the way, and yet understand what we are studying and what we can base our trust on. Our entire life can be personally practiced, personally, and realized, and lead to a joyful sense of living, of gratitude to all that we are being given, which we can't even acknowledge or see until we drop our eyes away from ourselves. I mean, if we're just fixated on me and my, what I want and what I don't want, in all the subtle ways that we're trained to do endlessly, it's difficult to see what we're being given. I keep thinking that all the Buddhas and ancestors who have sat before, who are men and women, who are people, who have practiced, have led you and me to be here today, every single one of them. How do you pay that back? Do you understand that without your suffering, you would not be here? Do we understand that without our suffering, and therefore being here, we can't help others suffering? From that perspective, our suffering can be seen as a gift. That's not all it is. But when the Dharma is our life, we have some understanding and appreciation of that. And that is why Yigendro Koen says, the Buddha way transcends being and non-being, transcends suffering and joy. Therefore, there are life and death, delusion and enlightenment, creatures and Buddhas, reality. And we're free to be in it. But you didn't stop. You knew what you had to do. Though the wind pried with its stiff fingers at the very foundations through their melancholy, though their melancholy was terrible. Sometimes in facing ourselves, that melancholy can be depressing. It's an acknowledgement of the harm I've done, the selfishness, the fact that to do this practice in a concentrated way, I've hurt others. Did you hear what I just said? To do this practice in a concentrated way, in a dedicated way, I've hurt others. I have to own that. It's a choice I made and continue to make, and I am hurting others. And so what needs to be done? And I try and do those things. That encourages me to be responsible for my life, for my decisions, for what I choose to do and choose not to do. This is a rough road. It will bring you face to face with your karma. Your karma is the life you have created with our ignorance, with the amount of time spent pursuing what seemed so crucial at the time, that we may now realize how small our view was then and what seemed to be so crucial. But we do not stop. Rough road and all. And yes, the obstacles are real. And the road full of fallen branches and stones, the fallen branches and stones of our desperation and pain, of our longing, and facing a demand to trust what we can't know till we step in, step forward. And the path before you beckons. But little by little, as you left their voices behind, the stars began to burn through the sheets of clouds. And there was a new voice, which you slowly recognized as your own. That new voice, that true voice, comes forth from a profound silence, a stillness. No stillness, no silence. We cannot hear our true voice. And that stillness and silence shines a light on what we know to be true. The possibility of a life without fetters. And it is your own unique life of wholeness, yours. voice that kept you company as you strode deeper and deeper into the world, not away from the world. Determined to do the only thing you could do, determined to save the only life you could save. So we vowed to save that life. Funny how that turns out, isn't it? When we address our life in a deep and profound way, turns out we're addressing all lives. Here's a poem, another poem, a short poem, by Master Dogen, called Genjo Koan. And for those times when you've read Dogen and said, I can't relate to this. This is so conceptual. It has nothing to do with me. I don't understand. He offers this, speaking directly to you and me. Each of us has our own special gift. This here skin bag among the falling petals. This here skin bag among the falling petals. Following through and leaping beyond the many and the one, self and other, are birds free from the chains of the sky? This is our only question. Given your special gift, are you free from your own chains?
Thank you for listening. To find out more about ZMM's programs, retreats, and residency, please visit us online at zmm.org.